Excuse me, Gov. Just the price of a cup at a coffee stall.
An old man like you should have been in the arms of Morpheus hours ago.
Arms of Morpheus, Governor, was there? I thought I knew all the pubs round here. Besides 4 o'clock in the morning. That's more. We're both under the influence. Oh, go on, Governor. Just the price of a cup of tea.
You, my dissolute friend, are a perverter of the truth. A victim of the god Bacchus.
Oh, look. You're going to give me a bobber, aren't you? You got no call to insult me. I've got me pride, you know. Fat, you can stick your money.
No, 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 my friend. No, do not take umbrage. Rather take the coin you have requested. Here, my friend, is a glistening new tenpence.
Thank you, sir. And you can't even bless you. If you don't mind my saying, sir, don't you think you ought to get yourself a taxi? Roads are slippery after the rain.
If you're suggesting that I'm incapable of conveying myself to,
Blimey, he's been done in.
Help! Murder! Police!
Time now for you to take your place on the jury as we ask you to... consider your verdict.
Members of the jury, it is the Crown's case against the prisoner at the bar, Donald Hillary, that at approximately 4 o'clock in the morning on the 12th of May this year, that is 1980, he shot and killed Peter Richard Beaconsfield. The Crown is placed under certain difficulties since, in his own admission, the sole eyewitness to this murder is a certain Christopher Mould, who was, not to put a finer point on it, under the influence of liquor at the time when Beaconsfield met his death.
Just a minute, Mr. Sampson. I understand that this Mr. Mould is being called by the prosecution.
Yes, my lord.
Will this witness's testimony be contested by the defence? What have you to say, Miss Sullivan?
My lord, we have been in communication with the Solicitor General's office. So long as this witness is not brought forward to testify as to identification or is made to utter statements damaging to my client, we have no objection to Mr. Mould being called by the Crown. Otherwise, it will be our duty to call into question this witness's general physical and mental condition at the time.
What has the Crown to say to that?
We have before us Mr. Mould's statement made to a plainclothes officer within seconds after the shooting. If I may read it to the court, your lordship, will then pronounce judgment on its validity or otherwise.
Well, Miss Sullivan?
Defence has no objection, my lord.
Then I suggest that before you continue outlining the Crown's case against the prisoner, Mr. Mould's statement be read to the court.
Certainly, my lord. If I may be given a second or two to rearrange my documents. Yes, here we are. Now, this statement was made to a Detective Inspector Julian Walker, who was on the scene of the shooting within a matter of seconds. In fact, the unfortunate Mr. Beaconsfield was still alive when this senior police officer sent for medical help. However, here is Mr. Mould's statement. It says, My name is Christopher Mould.
I have no permanent address. A few minutes ago, I saw a toff walking down Swallow Street towards Piccadilly Circus. I stopped to give him the usual spiel, asking for the price of a cuppa, that sort of thing. I could see that the gentleman had more liquor under his belt than was good for him. He gave me 10 new pence. I was suggesting to him that he ought to take a taxi, as he wasn't very steady on his pins, when just then a car drove slowly by. A shot rang out, and the gentleman was talking to fell to the ground. I shouted blue murder, call for the police, when another gentleman ran up, told me he was a plainclothes officer, blew his whistle, sent for the ambulance. I was not able to identify the person in the car. In fact, I must admit, I'd had a bit too much to drink to remember what the car looked like or the bloke what was driving it. Signed,
Christopher Mould. It is countersigned by Detective Inspector Walker and the sergeant on night duty at Vine Street Police Station, Neville Fowler. Now, my lord, members of the jury, we are grateful to the defense team in that they did not contest Mr. Mole's statement, which they had every right to do under the circumstances. Since the necessity for this person's evidence becomes apparent when we hear testimony from a certain taxi driver named Ernest Gosling. Now, it is common cause as to the approximate time that the deceased, Peter Beaconsfield, met his death by shooting. It falls upon the Crown to briefly outline our case against the prisoner. It is this. Less than half an hour before the quiet of that street was shattered by the noise of a pistol shot, Beaconsfield and the man, now standing in the dock, were seen to quarrel violently. It would appear that the deceased, Peter Beaconsfield, was entertaining that distinguished actress, Harriet Tamworth.
Desperately, deliciously, extravagantly happy.
Don't look now, but I think we're being followed.
What on earth do you mean, darling?
Look who's standing by the entrance. It's your ex-boyfriend.
Oh, no. Don't tell me he's back in London. He telephoned me from Paris, said the plane was delayed by fog. I tried to tell him it was all over. Oh, dear. He's coming over. Looks in a filthy mood. Oh, please, don't quarrel.
Of course I won't quarrel. He seems to be unable to make up his mind what to do.
Wonder how he knew I was at Millionaire's Club.
Ah, charming. So, you didn't even bother to meet me at the airport.
Well, really, darling, you did say the plane was going to be hours late. You couldn't expect me to hang around that ghastly airport. Why should I? I told you we were through.
But now that you've heard the explanation, old boy, please don't interrupt our tete-a-tete.
Who told you I was here?
I took a taxi to your flat. The night porter told me he got a taxi for you, or rather, he got this Casanova a taxi. As soon as my back is turned...
You have no right to follow us here, particularly after what I told you earlier this evening on the telephone.
Harriet, you can't do this to me. Not after...
Oh, darling, you look grimy, unshaven, and you really shouldn't come in here without a dinner jacket. Now, let's not have a scene. There's a problem.
Scene? A scene? I must know what's gone wrong between us.
You're washed up, old boy. Finished. Kaput. Now, why don't you do what Harriet says and go away?
You keep out of this.
Keep out of it? I like that. Here I am, entertaining my guest for a quiet, intimate little...
Come on, Harriet. Oh. Come with me.
Oh, you're hurting me.
You'd better go away, otherwise you're going to get hurt.
Oh, I'll get hurt.
I've had enough of you.
No!
You shouldn't have done that. What are you going to do that for?
Waiter, get a bucket of water. Throw it over this gentleman so that he might recover.
Stop it, Peter. Stop it. They'll have the police here in a minute.
Gentlemen, please.
I want a large double brandy.
I'm going to get out of here. I wish I hadn't seen either of you.
Mrs. Tamworth will tell you that she stormed out of the Millionaire's Club, fearful of the possible adverse publicity she may receive as a result of the incident. You will hear sworn testimony to the fact that the deceased, Peter Beaconsfield, was persuaded to leave the club after drinking a quantity of brandy, whilst the manager and a waiter had taken the prisoner at the bar to the men's cloakroom, where they removed some of the evidence of the blows he received. The blood was wiped from his mouth and nose, and a cold compress applied to his injured eye. Unhappily, no member of the staff were aware that Hillary was carrying a gun. When he was considered sufficiently recovered from the assault made upon him by Beaconsfield, a taxi was summoned. And this, my lord, members of the jury, is vital to our case. For the taxi driver will tell you that as he began to drive away from the Millionaire's Club, he was told by the passenger to stop, given a sum of money, and the passenger, whom he identified as Hillary, was seen to get into a motor car. It is our case that Hillary pursued Beaconsfield and shot him from a moving car. That is our case against the prisoner at the bar, and in support of it, I call my first witness, Mrs. Harriet Tamworth. You are Harriet Tamworth, a widow, residing at Blue Towers, the Mall, West Hampstead?
Yes.
You are also, of course, an actress of considerable reputation, both here and abroad.
Thank you for saying so.
Both the deceased, Peter Richard Beaconsfield, and the prisoner at the bar, Donald Hillary, were well known to you?
Yes. Yes, but the newspapers and television commentators are making me out to be a kind of femme fatale. The whole thing was so unnecessary, so stupid.
Mrs. Tamworth, the court realizes the invidious position the regrettable circumstances have now placed you in. But I must ask you to please confine your utterances to answering the question the counsel puts to you.
Sorry, my lord, it was just that...
You don't have to explain, Mrs. Tamworth. I sympathize with you in the situation you find yourself in. Please continue, Mr. Sampson.
My lord, I understand, Mrs. Tamworth, that Mr. Hillary and yourself have been close friends for a number of years.
I wouldn't say a number. I met him about 3 years ago.
It was he who put up the money for Children of the Sun.
Yes, that's how I met him. He was the angel, as they say.
Would it be true to say that a close relationship, a friendship, developed between you?
Yes, until he became too possessive.
Jealous, do you mean, Mrs. Tamworth?
Yes, that's exactly what I do mean.
And the dead man, you knew him well?
Look, there was no eternal triangle, if that's what you're asking me.
Please, Mrs. Tamworth.
Yes, he was a dear friend of mine. May I say something further, my lord?
If it amplifies the answer, you may.
Some of the newspapers are saying that I was mistress, if that's the right word, to Mr. Hillary, standing there, and to Mr. Beaconsfield. It's absolutely untrue on both counts. And when Mr. Hillary started talking in terms of marriage, it was then that I decided to end our friendship, and not because he refused to finance my new play.
What happened on the night, or rather, should we say, the early morning of May the 12th?
May I go back a few hours? It will help me answer that.
Yes, please do.
Well, Donald was in Paris, something to do with the Common Market Commission, of which he was a member. I phoned him, telling him that the time had come to cut the Gordian knot.
What do you mean we'd better not see each other again? You can't treat me like this.
Sorry, darling, but I haven't got the courage to tell you to your face.
You got my telegram telling you that I was catching the 4:30 plane this afternoon. I expect to be in London by 6 or thereabouts. Be a darling and meet me at the airport and perhaps we can thrash this thing out.
It's no good, darling. The time has come to call a halt.
But you can't. You know I want to marry you. I've given up everyone and everything for you. Sorry, dear, that made me sound like one of your ham actors. I'll be awfully disappointed if you don't meet me at the airport.
We'll see. Darling, the line's getting very bad. I must hang up on you. I didn't have the courage to say that I wouldn't meet him, or that I'd arranged to go out with Mr. Beaconsfield. His plane was delayed by fog, and so he went chasing after me. If that wretched caretaker or night porter, whoever he is, hadn't told Donald where I'd gone, none of this might have happened.
And so he arrived at the Millionaire's Club.
They quarrelled. Peter hit him. Donald was knocked unconscious. I ran out of the club. I was afraid of the publicity.
And what time was this?
About 3:30 in the morning. I made a full statement to the police, every word that was said between us, and signed it. Do I have to go over it again?
No, madam, you do not. That is all.
My lord, before I commence to cross-examine Mrs. Tamworth, may I ask for a short recess in order to consult with my client?
Just to remind you that you're listening to Consider Your Verdict. And now, back to the courtroom.
Mrs. Tamworth, would you not say that Mr. Beaconsfield's assault on the person of Donald Hillary was brutal and unprovoked?
Well, I wouldn't say it was unprovoked. After all, Donald did come chasing me at the Millionaire's Club, and I was having dinner with Mr. Beaconsfield.
Nevertheless, Mr. Beaconsfield had a reputation of being a champion amateur boxer in his student days. In fact, got his half blue at Oxford.
Oh, yes. But I must say that Peter was rather drunk when he hit Donald, and he was provoked.
And would you not say that your summary dismissal of Mr. Hillary after 3 years of close friendship was a provocative act? Would you not say that Hillary's hope that you would meet him at the airport was a reasonable one?
I didn't see the point. Besides, the plane was delayed for hours anyway. I wasn't to know that the plane was going to be delayed. If the plane had been on time and I had gone to Heathrow, I would still have kept my appointment with Peter Beaconsfield. I'm not responsible for what happened.
No one says that you are, madam.
The case against your one-time friend and my client is that he deliberately shot and killed Mr. Beaconsfield. Can you possibly see him in the role of murderer?
I was shocked when I was told that Donald Hillary had been arrested. I could hardly believe it.
May I ask you to be more particular in your answer? Few people know Hillary as well as you. Can you see him in the role of murderer?
No. No, I can't.
Thank you. That is all.
I now call Mr. Leo Phillips. You are Leo Phillips, and you're manager of the Millionaires Club, situated at 46 Upper Brook Street, London, W1.
Yes, sir, I am.
Do you recognize the prisoner?
Yes, but I only saw him once. Came into the club one night, or rather, morning. Now, I could see he was looking for someone, and then he walked over to Mr. Beaconsfield's table. Of course, I didn't have any idea that they were going to come to blows.
I am not bothering you to testify as to the circumstances leading up to the blows. We've already had evidence in that regard. Did you see Mrs. Tamworth leave the club?
Oh, yes, sir. She walked out on them both, and I can't blame her.
Why do you say that, Mr. Phillips?
Well, sir, I saw Mr. Beaconsfield knock that gentleman over there stone cold.
Just a minute. By gentleman over there, you mean the prisoner between those two policemen?
Yes, sir.
Carry on, please.
Well, sir, Mr. Beaconsfield had quite a few drinks, but I wouldn't say he was drunk. Not at that time. As I say, Mrs. Tamworth started to leave.
I'm sorry, Leo. Please get someone to look after Mr. Hillary. I don't want to get involved. Would someone get me a taxi?
Right, madam, don't worry. I don't think there's any great damage done to the gentleman. We'll look after him. Oh, thank goodness there are no cops on the premises. I've got my license to think about, you know. Fred there will get you a taxi.
Where's that bucket of water?
And don't serve him any more drink.
I won't. Now, Mr. Beaconsfield, why don't you go home and let me get you a taxi?
I don't want a taxi. I need to walk.
I suggest you take a taxi.
If you think I'm incapable of driving my car...
Fred, get this gentleman's hat and coat.
It's gone 3 o'clock. The band had stopped. There were only 2 other tables occupied. I and a couple of waiters picked Mr. Hillary up from the floor, and he was still very groggy. We took him to the cloakroom and washed the blood off his face, and then we put him in a taxi. That's all I know about it.
Thank you for your evidence, Mr. Phillips. No more questions.
Mr. Phillips, you say you saw my client enter the club.
Yes, madam, I did.
Was he wearing an overcoat?
No, madam.
In fact, he was wearing a suit similar to the one Mr. Hillary is wearing now.
Yes, that's right, madam.
Now, Mr. Phillips, it is common cause that Beaconsfield was shot with a .38 bullet. You picked my client off the floor. He was still semi-conscious. Is that right?
That is right, madam.
You and a waiter then assisted him to the men's cloakroom, and there you washed the blood off Mr. Hillary's face. Did you see any signs of a gun?
No, madam, I didn't.
When you picked Mr. Hillary up from the floor, was his coat jacket buttoned or not?
Not.
Under these circumstances, would it not be reasonable to say that, had Mr. Hillary been carrying a gun, you would have spotted it?
Well, I should think so, yes.
Thank you, Mr. Phillips. That is all.
Point on re-examination, my lord.
Proceed.
Mr. Phillips, you are in no position to know whether Mr. Hillary carried a gun in his pocket or whether he kept a gun in the cubby hole of his motor car, are you?
No, sir, I'm not.
That is all. I now call Mr. Ernest Gosling. You are Ernest Gosling, living at 26 Ivy Street, Kilburn.
I am.
What is your profession, Mr. Gosling?
I'm a taxi driver, sir.
In the early morning on the 12th of May this year, were you not summoned to the Millionaires Club to pick up a fare?
I was.
And do you recognize your passenger in this courtroom?
Oh, yes, sir. That's him.
You're pointing to the prisoner at the bar, Donald Hillary. Are you sure it is he?
Positive, sir. I hadn't been travelling more than about a quarter mile when he taps on the window and he asked me to stop. I did so. And then I asked him... Why do you want me to stop here, sir? The porter said you wanted to go...
I've been in a fight and I hardly know what I'm doing.
I completely forgot. I've got my car. Turn around, please. It's in Henley Street, just behind the Millionaires Club.
Very good, Sibyl. You look as though you've been in the wars.
Oh, don't worry. The wars haven't started yet. I'll get the swine. Let's hope it's loaded.
I beg your pardon, sir?
Never mind. You just drive. Hurry, I don't want to lose him.
Lose who, Governor?
Will you get moving?
I drove to Henley Street. He paid me off. And I saw him go to a white Olympic. And then I went back to my own taxi rank.
I won't keep you more than a moment or two. I just want to re-emphasize 2 points for the benefit of the jury. You won't recognize the prisoner at the bar as the fare you picked up at the Millionaires Club at approximately 3:40 a.m. on the 12th of May?
Yes, sir. I'm certain it was him.
And you swear that this fare said to you, I am now quoting your words, the war hasn't started yet. I'll get the swine. Let's hope it's loaded.
Yes, sir. He did say that.
That is all.
Mr. Gosling, my client, denies emphatically using the phrase, I'll get the swine, let's hope it's loaded. He says that in reply to your remark that Mr. Hillary looked as though he'd been in the wars, my client answered, I was in the wars all right, the rotten swine, he was absolutely loaded. Do you know the word loaded is an Americanism for drunk? One says a man is loaded, meaning he's under the influence of liquor.
Yes, madam, but...
And do you know we have a sworn deposition from a Mr. Mould testifying that when he accosted Beaconsfield in Upper Brook Street, Beaconsfield was staggering as a result of the liquor he'd consumed? And do you know that both Detective Inspector Walker and Sergeant Neville Fowler of the Vine Street Police Station have both made statements to the effect that it was quite apparent that the dying man was very much under the influence of drink.
No, madam, I didn't know, but how would I?
I put it to you, Mr. Gosling, that that is what Mr. Hillary referred to when he used the word loaded. He was referring to Beaconsfield's physical condition.
Well, I know different, madam.
Mr. Gosling, it is now the 7th of September, 1980. You've picked up your passenger on the 12th of May, 4 months ago. How do you come to remember his exact words?
When Inspector Walker came and questioned me, I remembered it then.
I suggest, Mr. Gosling, so intrigued are you with the dramatic situation of being a witness for the prosecution in a murder trial, that you are anxious that your testimony be as valuable as possible. When you were questioned by Detective Inspector Walker, did he ask you whether you saw a gun in Hillary's possession?
Yes, madam, he did.
I take it you had to reply no.
That's right.
I also assume that the police officer told you that Beaconsfield had been shot with a gun and that you would conclude that the gun must have been loaded for it to do its lethal work.
Well, I suppose so.
And because of this, you innocently confused and distorted Hillary's statement that he'd been in the wars, that he'd been attacked by a man who was loaded at the time. That is all.
You have heard evidence that the prisoner at the bar said to the taxi driver, the war hasn't started yet. I'll get the swine. Let's hope it's loaded. Not many minutes later, his enemy is shot to death as he was walking along Upper Brook Street. I say to you, members of the jury, that the Crown has proved its case against Donald Hillary beyond all reasonable doubt. And because of this, you would be failing in your duty did you not find the accused guilty and that he be duly punished for the wanton and illegal destruction of human life.
Is not Hillary's reputation in the diplomatic and commercial world sufficient to convince you that such a man would not do anything so rash and stupid, as well as criminal, as the act for which he is being charged? Had he intended to go back to the club or to follow Beaconsfield, would he inform the taxi driver of his intent? And what is more, would this man of high reputation shoot and kill in front of a third person? I'm referring to Mr. Mould. The man in the passing motor car from which the gun was fired would have no means of knowing that Mould, too, was under the influence of drink. No, members of the jury, Beaconsfield was assassinated by some person or persons unknown. And if justice is done to Hillary, it will be in the nature of a verdict which declares him innocent.
Well, what is your verdict? Do you find the accused guilty or not guilty? In a moment or two, we shall bring you the verdict as recorded at the trial. Well, what was your verdict? Did you find the accused guilty or not guilty? In the actual trial upon which this dramatic presentation was based, the accused was found guilty. Consider Your Verdict is written and produced by Michael Silver for Springbok Radio. Don't forget to join us next Wednesday morning at 11:45 when we shall again invite you to consider your verdict.